Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jivraj, and on this podcast, I speak with founders, investors, and domain experts from the Indian Valley, trying to understand the art of building a legendary company. In this episode, I speak with Manish Chaudhary, co-founder of Wow Skin Science. Manish is one of the OG consumer founders in the country, having built a very purposeful consumer brand in and from India, pioneering many of the brand building concepts that many Indian companies now follow. Wow has become a leader in the space, not just nationally, but also internationally, proving the potential of homegrown consumer brands in global markets. Breaking down the journey through this episode was absolutely insightful. We discovered how Manish has built Wow, going deep into the brand building process, including global expansion, new product development, and focus areas for brands in general. This conversation is an absolute gem of an episode. Stay tuned till the end for some very actionable learning. But before we get started, here is a quick word on our sponsor for the episode. This episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast is presented by Stride Ventures, which is one of India's leading venture debt funds, becoming synonymous with innovative startup financing in India. Stride Ventures provides comprehensive solutions going beyond venture debt to cater to distinctive challenges faced by high growth and inherently strong businesses backed by leading institutions. The fund has a portfolio of over 60 plus diversified companies, having deployed more than 1,500 crore rupees to date. In just over 2 years, Stride Ventures has emerged as the preferred venture debt lender in the Indian ecosystem. To know more about this phenomenal fund, visit strideventures.in, that is spelt as STRIDEVENPURES.IN. And with that, let's dive in to the 131st episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast with Manish of Wow Skin Sciences. Thank you so much, Manish, for joining me. Incredibly delighted to be hosting you.
Ajay Raj, really excited to be at your show.
Thank you so much, Manish. I've heard such great things about you from multiple people in the ecosystem. And I'm a consumer of Wow as well. So as a consumer, hosting the founder of a company that I admire is definitely a special moment. What I'm most curious about the journey is how well you've built the brand, the products, and more importantly, the global expansion. I want to cover much of it in the conversation. But to get us started, I'd be very curious to understand what got you excited about this opportunity, right? To the best of my understanding, you don't come from a consumer background per se. This was not like an epiphany that, got you there. It was not like something you were dreaming of since childhood. So if you can maybe talk to us about those early influences and what got you to start Wow Skin Science, I think that'll be very interesting.
Jivraj, really excited to be at your show, but I would love to starting point. You hit the nail at the right spot. I'm a failed entrepreneur to start with. Obviously, I had a business which did well, then went bust. And then coming out of it was something which was a tough one. But, I never gave up hope. Always thought, we'll make a comeback. And that's when we thought about being a part of the internet revolution in this country. When I say internet revolution, is the era of Flipkart and Amazons of the world, when they set up shop in India. And obviously we wanted to be a part of it, not too sure what part we would want to be in. And that's where the creation of health and beauty and Wow Skin Science and Wow Life Science emerged for us as an opportunity. At the end of the day, I've been a retailer myself for years to come. I love speaking to consumers. It's my passion. Always looking at how do I solve a problem? How do I create something which is here to last for long? I love brands. Two of my biggest brands I love and admire using, or when I buy it, I get happiness, is Nike and Apple. I don't know. It just gives me joy, right? And that is something what I also wanted to create, that how can I have those kind of uniqueness which goes out to a consumer when they say, you know what, I love using this on a daily basis. And that's where we emerged as creating Wow, as well as the skin, as well as the life science part of the business. So health and beauty was something for sure was a part of our comeback. But there again, innovation was critical. Continue to believe in two things what we started off. What can we build what our competition doesn't have? What can we communicate which our competition doesn't have? And so, if you would have followed us, at least in 2015, we started this business in late 2013, 2 years did everything and anything possible as an entrepreneur, tried everything, right? You just don't know when and what clicks. 2015 is when we got clean beauty into this country, no sulfate, no parabens. Today, it's a hygiene across all brands, right? Everybody's quacking on that same communication. But we were always very ahead of understanding what consumers want, modernizing ingredients or natural ingredients to upcoming millennials and Gen Zs, who was the immense users of digital. They were the online adapters. And what can you serve them? That's when we created the apple cider vinegar, the drink. From there, we followed right till, you know, consumers are not only using it externally, but were using it also for their consumption for hair care as well as for skin care. That's when we entered into hair care and skin care, which our best-selling product, the apple cider vinegar shampoo. From there, we straddled into so many other ingredients. Like aloe vera of ours is made out of 99.9% pure aloe vera. You go to any of the retail stores, you'll see an aloe vera gel, which is green in color, has fragrance. That's not being true to what you are. So if you ever use our aloe vera gel, 99.9% aloe vera juice, no fragrance, crystal as clear as to use, consumers love it. You know, those were those days where we guys used to think, you know what, consumers might not like this product, right? India is all about smell, texture, achha dekhna chahiye. These are some bets. And, you know, it did really change a lot over the last few years. Now, I should say it's coming close to 6-7 years. The Indian consumers' choices have changed. You know, it's real India who's looking at now, you know, I want to solve my consumer problems at a younger age than deal with it when I'm in the 40s. That is something where we saw it as an emerging trend. And that's when we thought, you know what, let's be a part of the internet revolution in this country. Health and beauty is a great space to go out, solve consumers' problems. And get something which is refreshing in a category which is very boring, right? You walk into a retail store online, you're seeing all those brands which have been present for years and decades. How do you refresh that? And you know, India deserves so many good brands. We are an underpenetrated country as brand availability, right? It's explosive, but do remember we are fighting in a $18 billion market. Obviously, it's run by the heavyweights. We might not even be 0.5% of the company, 0.5% of the category, but we are looking at something as this, as something to come for decades to come and how large you can make this. So that's a small reason why we started and where we are. Just love of being a part of the health and beauty industry. I think there's so much to do, and that's our passion every day where we thrive for every morning when we wake up.
Wonderful. I love that. I think there were a lot of important nuggets there that I want to double click on. And I was just thinking, for the benefit, let's maybe go chronologically, right? When you started, I'm guessing the awareness in terms of just products, in terms of, you know, how the consumer was evolving was not as much. What you claim as hygiene right now, of course, as you mentioned, was not there at the time. So when you're building something so category creating, what are the negatives of it, if I may, right? Or what are the challenges rather, right, that you have to foresee so that you can accordingly tame towards the market? Because it can't be shock for the audience, right? It has to be pleasant. How do you maintain that balance?
So I don't think so. Their audiences, their consumers. Consumers, you know, creating categories is expensive. You need a lot of patience. And also there could come with negativity also in it, because you remember you're changing consumers' style of using a product, right? You're going a little bit backwards because you're removing the frills out. You're giving them the cleaner, so they might not get that same experience on what they might have been using harsh chemicals all these years. There's a little adaption towards where that is, right? That's been one of the challenge. And any category creators have those issues, right? But the importance is in that category creation is how do you also listen to your consumers? And also how do you improve along with feedbacks and reviews, which is extremely critical. And that's something what we kind of took it very heads on, you know, that, you know, we will not take any of these reviews in a, you know, customer galat hai, but we'll go in the other way around and say, you are right. But we'll validate that for you. And we'll improve only if we have a bulk of these queries coming in the same trend. So it's when you create category, I think you've got to be very, very cognizant about a lot of moving parts along with it. Can't be two or three elements firing in it, but it has to be a 360 degree involvement into that, right? Otherwise, you could slip force into a lot. So I wouldn't say we are still, but I'm seeing year on year Indian consumers adaption a little bit more better than where it used to be. It's a great time to be a consumer in this country today, right? With so many options and innovations going across the roof, across not only with us, so many other competing brands doing a phenomenal job. But to be honest, we are the ones who set category at least onto the clean beauty on what we started off on.
Absolutely. I don't think there would be any dispute to that. The other interesting aspect, Manish, about creating a category is the evangelism, right? You spoke about communication very evidently in your opening remarks. Talk to us about the role of evangelism, the role of communicating new ideas effectively to the audience to that tune.
So, see, not in the camp of, you know, it's being very honest. When we say organic and natural is a very manipulative word. Consumers are very smart. If you look at any of our bottles or our products we give you a percentage of natural on our every SKU what we go out. It's a plus and a minus because somebody might be communicating 100%, but we might be communicating 96 or 97%. But we want to be in that camp. The process might be slower sales or some things which don't hurt sentiments of your consumer. Because remember, you're a new brand. You have to build trust with your customers, which is the number one priority for you. Without that, it's a no-go. So at our end, at least we kept to fundamentals. Never been in the camp of shortcuts, of rigging things around. That's not what we want to do. We want to be as true and honest to what we can give our customers. Maybe the process takes us a little longer and harder, but we prefer doing that. Because as I told you, we are here to stay for a long time to come. We're competing with brands who are celebrating a century of them in existence. And we will be next year celebrating a decade of our existence. So we've got 9 times more than others to survive on. And building brands is not easy. It's a process. You need a big heart to do it. And I think you need to do it correctly.
Absolutely. I think those are, again, very, very important fundamentals. The other aspect, Manish, and I see an emphasis there also is listening to the consumer. And doing that at scale seems like a problem statement from outside, which is difficult to navigate. Any cues in terms of how do you go about listening to the consumer, especially because you're getting such diversified feedback from all sides? And how do you then maintain it at scale and don't lose the crux of your fabric, right, as an organization? How do you do that?
You know, every journey has its own issues. At our end, 0 to 4 was easy to do. 4 to the other ones, what got us to 4 is not going to be the same way which gets you to 10. I think it's very important that a brand like us, which is digital, data is going to play a very important role for us. You're going to be understand predictive consumer understanding, feedbacks, coming down to understanding what is the on what kind of bulk data would you take some kind of amendments towards where you go. It's very important that how you balance it. So you got to wait for some signals, which only customers can do, right? We are one company who was known for giving 4,000 after sales service to a consumer on how the products of ours used to be. You know, in India, nobody heard about that. It used to be always a micro oven or a washing machine or a television. After sales service, sir, kaisa aapko, we used to do that with every consumer who used to transact with us with a call. We had an 8 minutes average talk time with a customer those days. I mean, that showed, you know, consumers were wanting to speak to us for 8 minutes for a shampoo or for a face wash. That's phenomenal, right? And that is something where you get to know a lot. And what data you collect, that's when you start understanding what's required and what's not. And that's a big decision making for us.
Got it. I think I've also heard you talk about data and the importance of it in previous conversations. So I think that's a very, very important factor to understand. Going to another side, Manish, I'd love to understand how new product development works at Wow. Because I think one thing, at least as an outsider, which really stands out about the brand is the continuous innovation in the release of products, the kind of products that you've come up with over the years, right? So if you had to give us a you know, behind the scenes of how do you come up with maybe trends, then conceptualization, then testing, then release, etc., right? If you can just give us a mind map of that, that'll be super valuable.
Yeah, so Jivraj, very critical is in brands like us, very innovation is the utmost criticality in building a brand. Do remember one thing, being digital, your cost of failure is much smaller than what you could do on the older times of offline. Post last year, innovation used to be run a lot by me. I'm not in the cap of taking gut calls. I like to look at least some signals of data. But today I can just proudly tell you that what you'll see in 2023, you'll see amazing data-led innovation from our end. A lot on understanding first, what can I solve for a consumer? How big the TAM of that SKU is? Also getting into details about how can I solve a consumer a little bit more better. Again, going back to those two theories again, what can I build what my competition doesn't have, and what can I communicate what the competition doesn't, which will be a lot more stronger with data read in 2023. Those days when we started off, it was used to take us 2-3 months to launch a product, contract manufacturing, easy to do. But as you get larger, you've got to be more responsible with your customers. You've got to go a little bit more detailed. So maybe today our pipeline takes around 8 to 9 months. But that 8 to 9 months comes with solid data. And remember, what's the difference between us and the larger companies we are competing with is the speed and agility on how we can create and launch products. But today we are doing a little bit more deeper to understand the science and the promise is validated before we do that. A lot of that is done by data. We're also trying to see if we can get some AI tools to help us get a little bit more crisper, which I'm very excited if the team can kick that off in 2023. A little bit more looking at where the trends would be for 2023, 2024. But do remember, you've got to balance yourself from not being a trend company and building products which are going to stay here for a very long time. Speaking to a customer of ours who's been using our shampoos in the last 6.5 years yesterday, which is very critical. Now, as we get larger, Saturdays and Sundays, we try to at least reach out to our customers and understand what more they want to do. And that's where I spend a lot of time. We encourage our leadership to do. And you'll see some of those things cracking in 2023, 2024 for us, which will get us the next round of growth for where we are looking at. But I think data, AI, all these things are going to be something which is very exciting for companies like us. We're sitting on decent, sizable data of consumers who buy these products, right? Remember, the larger companies, customers are the retailers and the distributors. Our customers are the real consumers. So you can make your own groups, you can make your own committees and try a lot of other things. Testings happen, blind testings of our products happens through our own customers where we reach out, you know what, hey, we got some new innovation coming. We'd love you to try this product. What do you think? How do you think this will work? So all these things are done a lot more with data and our own customers, which we have been having for years to come, which should be our moat for years to come, right? On product creation as well as marketing.
Wonderful. I think that's very, very crucial. I love that structure. What's playing in my head is I'd love to understand how do you design an org which is always looking forward. You've spoken about multiple components, communication, brand, new product development, and also data, AI, right? There are so many moving parts. How do you ensure that, you know, priorities are sorted within the organization? Where do you over-index on in terms of talent? What's that like at WOW?
Yeah, so at our end, you know, Jibraj, I'm in the camp for long term, and it's very critical. Founders have that view. And, you know, in that, you might have out of 10 years, you might have 2 or 3 really bad years, and you've got to be prepared with that. Being a founder is a very lonely journey, and it's a tough one, right? It is something which is, I love doing it. I love taking challenges. But, you know, at the end of the day, what are we all looking at building an institution? I can proudly say in 2022, we moved in that direction. Even if it was a cost of growth, cost of a lot of other things, we'll get our org correct. And 2022 was a time where I spent a lot of time on building a great organization. Today, I can proudly come and tell you, we've got 14 rock stars who have joined us from Amazons of the world, L'Oreal's of the world, Dabbers of the world, who are building the organization. And you know, the Karan, who's my younger brother, is the co-founder along with me. At the end of the day, we said, founders have their egos. Founders, you know, say that, you know, we know only how our business better and nobody else knows that. I think those are some places where you got to take a little bit of a backstep and you got to think big And what do you want to create? You want to create a great amount of talent who comes and creates history along with you. And I can tell you 2022 was a year of fundamental change for us, of getting our org right. Got two brilliant investors at my end, Chris Capital and GIC, who encouraged us, saying that, you know what, let's get the basis correct for this year. Even if it's a trade-off on a lot of other things we want to do, but let's invest in people. And that's something which is amazing at our end. Karan and myself have taken a few steps behind, leaving the individuals who we think are much smarter than us, who can come and run a great organization from where it is. So every organization has its journey. We are in that journey of a founder-led company to an institution. And I hope that pays off. And that'll be the happiest day for us.
Absolutely. Talk to us more about that, Manish, if you may. I mean, the journey of maybe hiring key leaders this year, right? What was that like? What is a leader for you, right? What were the skills you were looking at? Because this is an 8-year, 9-year-old baby for the founders, right? Like, how do you take that back step? What do you identify for and then let go of things, right? Maybe if you can double click on that.
So, you know, it's an old saying. I think all founders would say that hire people who are smarter than you. I think that's the starting point for all. There are so many individuals who have done a better job than what you think you can. At the end of the day, it is something where an organization, I want to be remembered for WOW was built by people and not by a person. And that's so true. And we're seeing those effects coming in place for us. High on ownership from the individuals which have got on board. But, you know, at the end of the day, culture is extremely critical at our end. You want to work with like-minded people who have got the same zeal as what you want as your vision. And I think that's a starting point for me, if you ask me, on the org build-up for where we are. So we are in the phase of investing into people, which is our first shooting star for what at least I am looking at on that. Individuals, obviously, who have come on board have got expertise and others who don't have in the organization. So it's a very interesting phase, but you got really good hard-hitting fence hitters in our organization today.
Got it. That's lovely to hear. Taking a different step, right? Like maybe a different direction to the conversation. I'd love to understand from you what the Indian consumer wants, right? Like if you had to give us a profile of your observations of what the Indian consumer wants, is it about a great product? Is it price sensitivity? Is it sustainability as the current trend, whatnot, right? If you can maybe give us your vantage point to how the consumer has evolved and what do they essentially want, I think that'll be very interesting to hear from you.
So, you know, I start with, we are the land of the cheapest Coca-Cola in the world, right? Yeah, sells the cheapest Coke. Price, we're very price sensitive. I think India, the consumers where we are, young India, wants products which work for them, which gives results, and which I can associate and I feel good about. Very clear point of view where that goes. Continues to, see, we're a emerging economy. We see a lot what's happened in the West where consumers, you know, flirt all around brands. Loyalty is low across wherever you do, but they settle down to something which is good for them and then stick to it for long. We're coming into that phase, I hope, in the next couple of years, where you'll see a lot of loyalty coming across the board. But this Indian consumer is looking at today, trying a lot of new is very critical for them. That is something what is also a challenge for companies like us, because you have to continue to churn something new and refreshing, but it's great. And I think that's a part. We continue to be a very cost-conscious market. Price elasticity still has a band. If you go beyond X, you don't have the velocity. If you go too down, then your unit economics don't work. If you're in the center, you make something. So it's long-term, but you know, it's emerging. But the best part is digital is still small in this, small in India, which we're all betting big for that pie to become bigger.
Absolutely. Now, to that last point, I think it's also interesting to know that there's a lot of conjecture in the ecosystem now that will only digital first brands is in fact D2C and is a distribution channel or is it a way of thinking? And how will the new age brands, you know, adjust to the offline sort of distribution play? And WOW, of course, I think I was reading an interview where it was mentioned that digital will become 60% next year. It is around 80-85, if I'm not wrong. I'm just reading out numbers from what I'd read. What are your thoughts on how can new age brands also build an offline first strategy? How has WOW been able to crack that and what's the thought process there?
So D2C is only a channel. I hate it when people call us D2C brands, right? What is D2C? It's a channel. You're cutting the middleman off in that transaction. But at the end of the day, you're a new age brand. And as a brand, you have to go everywhere and anywhere at the right time. Digital is a great place to go because your distribution is sorted out with the world's likes of your own website, with today e-commerce, Q-commerce. Q-commerce is emerging. Look at how good it's doing for brands like us, New Age. It's becoming pretty sizable. You see our ads across television or digital. You can order a new product of ours within 30 minutes. When Amazon did that 2 years back for 2 days delivery, we said, wow, this is insane. I think 30 minutes is revolution, right? But remember one thing, that at the end of the day, in our category, 90% of the commerce happens in offline. 10% is online still. It's a journey for you to go offline. We took that couple of years back. We are at 40,000 plus stores today. We're well distributed, and something what we want to invest into, right? But it's a right time for it, because till the time you don't build demand, longevity of your product, loyalty, repeatability, offline will always be small for you, but will take off once you have these metrics in place. Creating brand for the offline journey is very critical. Why to buy you on that shelf? Remember, online, I'm competing with 50,000 plus brands on Amazon. On the shelf in any of the modern trade or wherever, it's cluttered. You get lost. That's the reason where demand of why does a brand exist very critical for your journey offline. I continue to tell it to new age founders who get you online correct, and then that's when you go offline. Because offline, you get only one chance. If the retailer loses trust in you, he's not going to stock you back again. So there's a timing and journey for where you can go offline. But timing is very critical. Continue to build online first. You know, when we got the first signal, people are buying our offline. We had zero people on street for offline. And we used to see dukandars stalking us. So they were buying for us from Amazon, Flipkart, and our old website. Till the time we woke up and said, you know what, let's clean this cat this channel up. Let's do it properly. And that's today when we have a big army of sales individuals working for us on daily basis, going to stores. We have 40,000 plus stores reached today in this country.
No, that's phenomenal. I think those numbers are way beyond actual DTC brands doing that more often. I think this seems like a front runner. Any more learnings, Manish, there? I mean, for the benefit of the audience, as to how did you crack offline distribution? What was the journey to 0 to 40,000 stores now?
So I think offline is still not something I can proudly come and tell you or cracked. We are in the process of building it. Cracking is at the end of the day, you need people and you need money and infrastructure for that. I think cracking is when you have demand and consumers go and say, you know what, I want this, and I walk out. Even now, consumers are in a discovery phase with you. And I continue to tell this to everyone I meet. For the next 10 years or any new brand which is created, 10 years, consumers will only try you. So don't get excited with that 10 years journey, because consumers are only trying you. It's beyond that is when your testing time comes, right? And we're coming into the testing time phase, which is critical. But every businesses and opportunities and what you build has challenges. It's how you navigate through them is critical. But today, also very critical to understand is we got our own D2C website. So our offline is built also a lot with our data of where consumers are buying, where can I go and put up a store or a retailer very close to those geographies. Is something where you can get some of these heat map understanding through our own data point.
Absolutely. Well, that's very fair. Let's talk about a market and a channel that you have cracked, which is, for me, one of the most fascinating things with the US expansion, right? Like there's a Amazon global case study as well on how the brand has done. And that's a very unique proposition, because we've seen this in the ecosystem, right? Services as a way we've cracked, SaaS we've cracked, but not consumer products yet. So WOW has championed this wave of building an Indian, building from India for the world of sorts, in consumer. How was that journey like? What was the thesis? How do you crack it?
Yeah, so crack, I want to use it. Maybe after a decade, we can talk on crack. But today, it's all about getting things correct. You know, so India and US business are different. They're two different entities who do it. We plan to bring that entity back into India revenues for next year, which is a pretty sizable business for us. We are in 3,000 Walmart stores in the US. It's the first Indian beauty brand to do it. A decent amount of Kroger stores in the US. We just got listed in HEB in the US again. We have a decent sizable business on Amazon USA. And you know, at the end of the day, you know what we thought about, you know, there's something called J Beauty for Japan Beauty, K Beauty for Korea Beauty, We are the land of Ayurveda, and we don't have a good shot of anybody going out and doing it. And I hope we, the new breed of brands, become the eye beauty of the world, right? Which is India beauty. And you know what we thought, you know, whatever we build, we'll build it for the world. We'll not build it only in India. We are in those kind of stories that there is a Doordarshan era of brands which used to advertise and only used to sell across Doordarshan, wherever Doordarshan used to, and Doordarshan now even used to talk about set-top boxes, which is around India, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka. But today you are at the YouTube era of brands. Consumers watch your ads across, your content across the world. I frequently get so much of demand on my LinkedIn asking, hey, we want to open your channel distribution in X country. So that we're present in 14 plus countries today. But I can just tell you, it's very clearly, it's Doordarshan era of brands and YouTube era of brands. And you're a YouTube era of brands, so you're forced to go global. And that's something what not only us, a lot more will inspire from and create that journey.
I think that's very commendable and refreshing to hear. I'm sure everyone listening will further dreamy-eyed, because companies like WOW will be able to do it and will be able to build brands from India for the world. And that's very, very phenomenal. I think this has been super exciting. We've covered a bunch of things. As we go on to concluding aspects of the conversation, Manish, I'd love to know on a more personal level what this 9-10 year journey means for you, especially because from a company lens, we can quantitatively put into numbers where the growth trajectory has led. However, personally, we don't have any benchmarks, metrics, right? So if you can maybe share with us what this personal journey has meant for you, how you've matured through the 10-year journey of building the company, that'll be very eventful.
So obviously, I wake up every morning paranoid on what I'm creating. It's very good to be paranoid, because you don't know, you may wake up and everything is gone for you next morning, right? You know, I believe to continue to work very hard. I think the level of being honest and transparency has improved at my end, at least. May it be with my partners, may it be with my colleagues, my brother. Those are some things which I've had a lot of immense year-on-year improvement, at least at my end, which is very critical. Numbers point of view, I think if the inputs are correct, the outputs will be as good as where it can be. So I don't worry about that. But you know, as an entrepreneur, you've got to understand you will go through cycles. So there will be 5 or 6 really good years, and there'll be 1 or 2 really bad ones. And how do you deal in that 1 or 2 years? To be very honest, we've all been in a very nice, rosy growth story point of view, where we have not seen difficult times, right? And difficult times will at least come and tell, you know, these companies stood the test of time. I hope those are some of those things which we can cross those barriers at the right time, with the right metrics, people who are deployed on it. But at least at my end, I'm very future thinker. I have a very short memories on things which I would have made a mistake or I would have lost on. But I do remember from my losses a lot. But I don't think about it. I always think about what's coming next. So I might have a brutally bad day yesterday, but I can just not think about it and move forward from where it is for tomorrow.
Absolutely. That's super nice to hear. I'd love to know more about that mindset, because I think it's evidently clear from your words. And in fact, the brief we spoke before starting the recording was also the long-term mindset, right? You've emphasized on the fact that you're building for, you know, decades and not years. You've emphasized on this being a long journey. How did you inculcate this mindset? How does this practically equate to actions in the short run as well?
See, we are humans. We filled with joy and sorrows, and that's an entrepreneurial journey, right? When you are up, everything looks good. You look invincible. And when things are tough, you go through those really tough ups and downs. You have to deal with that at our end, right? Being an entrepreneur. But, you know, at my end, always it's the future. I have very short memory on the past, what I've done, because that refreshes me, energizes me. What's next? Always looking at what's the big thing next. Yeah, you do have bad patches of time when you think you're off form, your creativity level. Because see, being a founder, if I turn left, everybody turns left. If I turn in another direction, it's very critical that you keep your calm, composure, emotions to a side. But we're humans, we make mistakes, and we'll continue doing that. But at my end, I'm very, very clear about the future. I don't cry if I'm in a bad position today, but I'll always look at how do I uplift from where we are. So it's very critical. You have to self-navigate yourself, be a self-starter a lot every day, personally to motivate yourself. I've been kind enough to have that kind of mindset.
Fair enough. That's very helpful. Manish, as we, go ahead, and my second last question for the conversation is more around, we talk about these motivations, and of course, there's a strong mission to what you're doing. But if you can share more intensively what this journey means for you, entrepreneurship, the goal of the podcast is to not make entrepreneurship seem fancy at all. It's to humanize it to an extent. So if you can maybe talk about those things, that'll be helpful.
Yeah, so entrepreneurship is not easy. And I think none of us have signed up for that. We all know about the challenges, the ups and downs. I wouldn't say downs, I would say the challenging ones which will be there, right? It's all about how much risk can you take? How do you react to tough positions? I think it's very important how you as an entrepreneur validate yourself. What are your key metrics you follow on what you're building? My end, very clear point of view. I know what I'm into, so there's no cribs at my end. If there are difficult times or some things I have to do, I don't have to go and give my sorrows out to anyone else, but I have to get up and do it myself. So I think leadership comes from there. I think it's very important. Your vision is very well articulated within yourself. I mean, what do I really want to do? At my end, it's very clear. I keep buckets of 5 years with me. When I turned 40, I thought about it in that month, that what will I want to be till 45? Then I do another pit stop again at 45, what I want to do at 50. So I've taken my life with these 5 buckets to where I am. And that's something where I love doing. 3 years into when I last thought where I would, in 2020, when I was 40, I'm going to turn 43 next week. So I have 2 more years for what I want to achieve on. I think I'm a little bit behind on that, but that's the way how I phase it. I would also recommend other people to have a pit stop. Keep yourself with a runway. That what will I do at X to where I am? And if you're disappointed about where you're not, then there's no cribbing or crying. You got to self-evaluate yourself and be honest where you did and where you could have done better. Right? We're humans. We'll continue to make mistakes. But what does those mistakes mean for us is extremely critical.
Really, I think that's very crucial to emphasize, and a great learning, a great thinking model as well. And hopefully some of us can utilize that. As we conclude, I'd love to know that, this is more stereotypical and I won't go dramatic, but if you had to go back to yourself 10 years back, right, and give yourself like 2-3 learnings that could maybe transform the journey in a better way, what would you tell yourself from an entrepreneurship learning lesson standpoint?
I think I should have at least, if I could be honest, I would have loved to have a team earlier than where I am 4-5 years before when I was. Because it's very critical that the foundations would have been much stronger for us where we are. That is something which I would go back to time, at least from where it was. And I think risk-taking, we obviously are very strong on taking risk-taking. I think very clear, if at all, one thing I would go back time on building a good team at a very young time, right? But we are all bootstrapped, so we don't have the money for it. We always think, founder will save money, do it ourselves, jugadu stuff. We have fallen into that, but no regrets. We are here to build something to stay here for decades. So we'll do the catch up.
Awesome. I think that's phenomenal. This was very, very refreshing, Manish. And I think I loved how honest and candid you were, having spoken about many fundamentals that can be crucial in the company building journey. Thank you so much for your time. I'm absolutely pleased to have finally spoken to the person who's built WOW and given so many of us the joy of consuming the WOW products. Thank you for your time, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Raj. Thank you.
Awesome. With that, we come to the end of this conversation. Thank you so much for tuning into the episode. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you're finding value with the podcast, do follow it on the audio streaming platform of your choice, drop in a review, and subscribe to our WhatsApp newsletter to get all the updates directly on your inbox. Thanks again. I will see you next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you recall. If you never try, you'll never know. Stay tuned and keep building.